Hi, I'm Deasia. I'm going to be your interviewer today. May I ask what your name is?
Arlene Ollie.
Where and when and how, when and for how long have you lived in Roanoke?
That's a good question. I spent the first 9 years of my life in Roanoke. And then we moved back in Roanoke in 62. So, I've been here, I guess that's a combined total of what, 62, 48 and 9, 57 years.
What schools did you attend and where?
My first school was Gilmer, and that was in Northeast on Gilmer Avenue, near where Hotel Roanoke is, near on the other side. And then school is very difficult for me to talk about it because it requires a lot of memory. Okay, so I came back to Roanoke and attended school here. I think it was like a couple of months in the fourth grade. And then I didn't come back again until I attended Addison in the 10th grade. And in between there, I was in school in North Carolina and Connecticut. And I attended my first integrated class in fourth grade.
Could you compare and contrast your experience in segregated schools versus integrated ones?
Sure. It was interesting. My primary reason for school, contrary to most young people nowadays, was to learn stuff. I like learning stuff, still do. Leaving Roanoke, from a segregated community to Fort Bragg was like a whole nother world. See, it wasn't just about black and white. It was about whoever was in the army. Those are the kids that I was in school with. And I can tell you quite frankly, it's really interesting to me because I never thought of it until I attended college. Contrary to all of this psychological claptrap about damaging the child's ego, either that's wrong or I was different. I was in school. I was with kids. It didn't matter. The only time race became an issue was twice. In sixth grade, my principal took me aside and told me to never say, yes ma'am, no ma'am, in school. She understood that was a Southern tradition showing respect. But for me not to do it in school there, because teachers would take advantage of it and think of me as being subservient. She didn't have to tell me again. That was fine. I was introduced because prior to that I'd been a straight-A student, and I was told that by my future teacher that I wouldn't make them in her class, because normally when black students from the South go to the North, they're put back a year, and they couldn't do that to me nor my brother. So she said I would not make straight-A's in her class. And a couple other things, but that was like a challenge to me. That meant I had to make straight A's in her class or blow up. And she did give them to me. That was the most impressive thing, I think, looking back on it as an adult, because she didn't have to. You know, that's a teacher's choice to give you what you earn or what she thinks you deserve. And she gave me what I earned. The only other time that I can think of that race became a major issue was seventh grade. I got my first F. My math teacher apparently didn't like having me in his class. I was the only black student in my class. And he gave me my first F, but he got fired, so I think we were even on that one. But that changed my entire outlook as far as education was concerned. I no longer worked for grades. I did not care what kind of grades I got. The important thing to me was to learn. I think I did pretty good on that.
What does segregation teach you about life?
Desegregation. That it's a really big world out here, and a lot of people that you meet are not going to be supportive and a positive entity in your life. I would say being in a desegregated life taught me more about, unfortunately, life's realities. They aren't always going to run into kind people or people who are trying to make you achieve your best. I would say as far as that would be the my most learning experience.
What was your most memorable experience regarding segregation?
Growing up in my neighborhood, it was the most freedom, pleasure, excitement, and security I've ever known. Of course, everybody told everything I did wrong, because I was always trying to escape my boundaries my parents had set up. But I needed to explore. And there was always someone to either call Mr. Steve as soon as he got home from work, that was my father, or call Miss Sadie on the phone to let them know where I was and what I was doing. But I often wish for all kids that they could experience that kind of freedom. You know, I didn't have to worry about Peter the pedophile or being victimized in any way, because, I mean, think about it. When I thought I was sneaking off, of course I had checked around to make sure nobody was visible, but there were always eyes watching. There were always eyes watching everything. And it's kind of neat. I mean, think about it. If today, where you live and in school, that everybody that you knew was trying to uplift you and trying to make sure you were safe. It's a really amazing experience, which unfortunately children don't have anymore.
In the 19th century, churches served as very important engines for activism and community development. To what degree did this continue in the 20th century, especially regarding to the civil rights movement?
I think that's where it ended. Going to church in my family was not an option. It was expected. Even though my daddy didn't go. That was the one thing. So I was the youngest in my family, so I was a daddy's girl. Whatever Steve said worked. But not for church. And I can remember being in church. You have to remember now, I'm talking about age whatever to say 9. Anything that was going on in the community that we needed to know about, we heard it in church. Most times from the pulpit. So whatever needed the community's attention came from the pulpit. Okay, so then I left and didn't have the same experiences in other churches in other states because the difference, I guess, was the desegregation. Mainly what you heard in church was related to church. Until the 60s, when the civil rights movement was really active, and of course I was back here in Roanoke, so I heard more of similar kinds of talk in church that I had heard as a child.
What are your views? What kind of talk was that?
What do you mean? In church, what kind of talk? Well, it would vary. It depended upon the need, what needed to be brought to the forefront. I'm assuming you're thinking about the 60s. What was going on in the movement further south? What we could do here to assist the movement. Unfortunately, Roanoke was not, in my opinion, very active. Unless maybe I was at the wrong churches, I don't know. Most of my activism, because although I loved and admired Martin Luther King, my dad and I talked about it. I told him I would not get involved in his movement because nobody was going to hit me and I was going to turn the other cheek. That just didn't work for me. So while I wanted him to be successful and he had my prayers, it was not something that I particularly wanted to be involved in because I knew I didn't have the proper mindset. The most activism that I participated in was here in Roanoke. I think it was the Church of the Brethren, which is a white church. We marched and we sang songs and I got bored. And that was kind of it for me.
Do you think that the sort of close communities that you had before are possible today?
That's a good question. It's possible. That's why I do the kind of research that I do. It would take a lot of hard work simply to make people understand that if I care about your child and tell your child to stop doing something that's dangerous or injurious to their health, I'm not nosing in their business. I'm trying to help you protect your child. So we've got this major gap between what I experienced and what goes on today. it was automatic to look out for your neighbor's children during my growing up period. Now, we've had this 40 years of desegregation and just kind of strange behavior as far as I'm concerned, where if I tried to prevent one of my neighbor's children from getting hurt or doing something really stupid, because I did a lot of those things myself, then their parents have the tendency to think I'm minding their business, I'm interfering. So it would be kind of hard for us to get back to that kind of caring and supportiveness without today's adults understanding where it came from. Does that make any sense to you?
What are your views on urban renewal?
It's the dumbest thing anybody could have ever done. It not only broke up neighborhoods, it broke up that kind of community spirit that I'm talking about. I think the humiliation that the adults felt not being able to protect their homes has been passed on generationally. I think people who were victimized by this situation have a very low level of trust, of expectations, of hope for a better future, because it didn't just happen once. My neighborhood was taken in 56, thereabout. We moved out in 55, actually, moved into the house that I live in now in January of 56. Okay, then after the Commonwealth renewal, then there was Kimball, then there was Gainsborough, and it's like the black community has no say-so over its property that they bought and paid for, as well as the neighborhoods. If you, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, because after being in the coma, time doesn't really have a major factor for me, but when they wanted to put this drug clinic up here on Cove Road, and the community was like, no, we don't want this, it's too close because Fleming is there, Ruffner was there, as well as Westside. But all these people who were on hard drugs, I'm talking heroin, would be coming into the community to get their fix and drive off. And the black community said, no, well, guess what, it's right up there. So it has done a lot of damage between the races as far as communication and trust, as far as city council is concerned, even as far as the black community is concerned, I think that shame and blame kind of thing has really been a generational thing. So instead of people trying to have a close-knit community and doing things that will benefit the entire community, it's become more fragmented, more of a community where people base their self-worth on material goods, and that's never good for anyone. So that's my view.
Were you personally affected by urban renewal? How?
Oh Lord, yes. When they took our home, like I said, the house that I live in is the house that my parents bought. And they bought 7 rooms of brand new furniture. And my father was a janitor for Roanoke City Schools, And so I understand, I haven't taken the time to look that up yet. They put the amounts that the families were paid for their property in the paper. So the school board decided my father was a 12-month employee, that he had too much money. So they took his job in June. So they had to buy a new house. They didn't ask for the house to be torn down. They had to buy a new house, and they bought 7 rooms of furniture to go into this house in January when we moved in. And then in June he had no job. So my mother didn't work, so she ended up deciding to take a job in Connecticut as a domestic for the summer. And my father decided he may as well go and see if he could find a job. So that left my brother and I, really 2 youngest of 5, without parents. And as Dr. Mindy Fully Love said, I became an orphan and a vagabond, meaning I didn't have a home. It's a really weird experience to go from being, think about it, in this sheltered community where everybody's watching me and will tell anything I did wrong, to being out in the world, a new world, with no boundaries and no parents. So I learned to grow up really fast. I'm very independent. I get on most people's nerves really, really badly. Because I speak my mind. I didn't follow any of the rules that they tell us to live by. And although people don't like me, they have to admire my, let's see,
the go-getter spirit?
Yeah.
That's what my mom says, I have the go-getter spirit.
That's right. Yes, that's a very good description. Because I believe that if God wanted me to do what everybody else did, we would all have one big brain and be connected to it somehow. But since he gave each of us a brain, we're supposed to be independent thinkers. Isn't that what education is supposed to do? So I get on a lot of people's nerves, but I think it's good for them. Yes. I better not go any further than that. I can get in more trouble.
What are the effects of urban renewal and current eminent domain policies in present-day Roanoke?
Same as ever. Whatever they want, by God, they'll take it. I don't know if your class is talking about what's going on, discussed this man's business over here off of Franklin Road, I guess it's Reserve Avenue in the corner. Carillion wanted it. City manager told him they could have it, and he's like, no, I don't want to give it up. They went to court, and guess what? They took his property. So it's still the same. I personally don't see any change in it. Perhaps if someone from the city wanted to explain it to me, maybe I'd understand it just a little bit better. But it seems to me that whatever the powers that be decide they want to do, they do it, regardless to whom it hurts. Or, as far as I understand, they took that man's property, but they didn't need it anymore. So he's just out of a business, and people are out of jobs. And I guess it'll be a parking lot.
To what degree was the railroad in Roanoke still important in the mid-20th century?
Moving products. The interstates didn't really come into Roanoke until they tore down my neighborhood. I either lived on the Addit going north or in the Civic Center parking lot. So until the interstate movement became larger, the only way to move mass products was by rail. And Roanoke was a booming town because of it.
Did you have any personal connection to it?
Love to ride them. Love to ride the train. No, my father never worked. Well, I shouldn't even say that. That was kind of silly. My father never worked for the railroad, but my uncles and my grandfathers did. I guess that would be my connection.
What did it represent to you?
Personally, as a kid, fun. I just loved to ride that train. And when my parents were in Connecticut and I was in North Carolina or here in Virginia, I got to ride back and forth, back and forth. In fact, I still love the train. I've ridden it from California here. It's a wonderful trip if you can ever, ever get to do it. Take advantage of it. Because all the things that you read about in geography, about the deserts and the mountains and
lakes.
Oh yeah, you get to see those too. But all the it comes alive, because on that train, I got on the train in San Francisco, and we went up through Oregon. I got on the Sierra Nevada mountains. I don't even know how they got tracks up there, because I kept saying, wow, what's that little blue thing? It's a little white thing that keeps dipping. That was a lake and a sailboat. That's how high we were on the train. I may as well have been in an airplane. So it's the railroad. Some of the things that we have, quote unquote, improved, the technology and whatnot, has been of great benefit to life. I think the loss of the railroad for transportation in particular has been detrimental, because, like I said, when you're in a car, you see stuff, but you're not going to get the same experience, say, if it's a family trip, because somebody's driving, so they can't see what's going on. Along with the fact, we have so many accidents on the road now, we have so much congestion on the roads. If we didn't have an either-or situation, I think it would be better for Americans in general, because maybe there would be some kind of leveling out, so we wouldn't have as much congestion on the roads or in the air, the pollution. So, I don't know. We've had a lot of improvements during my lifetime, and I promised myself I'd never say that, because my parents would always say, I can remember when, but I started saying that at 30. So I try not to go into that part too much.
What was Roanoke was once known as the Magic City, but now carries the nickname of the Star City. Besides the physical installment of the neon star on Mill Mountain, what would you say the nickname change represents? In other words, how does the nickname Star City apply today?
I have no idea. The Magic City, I don't know if you know, I'm a historian, would represent the changes, the growth, the magic of putting together a community. The Star City, on the other hand, to me, would represent a model place to be. That's not my interpretation of Roanoke. We need another one. Because we need to make some changes so that this becomes a community again. I mean, think about it. When things go on here, events, whether it's with the library or the civic center, guess what? It's almost like a segregated situation. Blacks don't go downtown. They don't go to the civic center. So while there's no definition given to segregated communities, that's what we're living. And we need to do something to make it better.
Well, that wraps up our interview. Do you think it's something that we should cover?
No, I probably said more than I should, but...
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, like how you said, today modern communities don't have the same bond as they usually do, and how you speak your mind, because I speak my mind too all the time. If there was any child in need today, like they're selling dope or their parents, you know, out there doing what they got to do, but they're not doing what they have to do for their kids, would you do anything to help them or to help anybody here at Addison to improve, to get better help and, you know, do something to fulfill the life service?
Oh, sure. I stick my neck out all the time. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I particularly hate drugs. It's such a crippling device. And you see so much glorification of the decadent, dastardly side of life. Feeling good about who you are comes from things that you can accomplish, things that you can do for yourself, like an education. You know, you can't control the grades you get, but you can control the amount of learning that you receive. Because see, once you get an education, I don't care what mom and dad is doing or anybody else is doing, once you learn, A, to love it, love learning, and B, to do it because you enjoy it, nobody can take that away from you. I'm going to throw this in as a bonus. I did not graduate from high school. I quit high school, I think, 3 or 4 times in the 12th grade. I can't remember. It was that often. But I graduated from Hollins College in 4 years, just like anybody else. So the reason that I was able to do that is not magic, as in the Magic City. It's the fact that I love to read. I love knowledge. So I do things so that my awareness continues to grow. And when I try to share that with other people, they say, she thinks she knows so much. No, I know what I know. If it bugs somebody, then I'm sorry. But I think as far as children are concerned, I'm out there. You know, I have invited several groups of kids to my home to help them with their studies. Only one showed up. And he showed up twice. And I guess the lure of the streets was more important. But I can guarantee you this. If you don't learn it now, you can't fall back on it. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. See, if you don't learn and you take a vacation from learning, okay, and then you realize all of a sudden, oh Lord, I need to go to college or do something so that I can have a good life. If you never learned the basics in the first place, guess what? You got to go back and learn those basics. So if you continue your education, not because you got to go to school, but through reading from the library or playing games that encourage growth, not shooting somebody or blowing up the universe. It's not a lot in that. But word games, games that require you to think, those things will benefit you. And if your friends tell you you're not cool, oh yeah. When they're in jail or wishing they could go to jail so they could have somewhere to live, then you can kind of say to yourself, well, I tried to help them, and just go on.
This is what I usually say when people say, I'm too smart, because they used to call me a nerd because I like to read. I read plenty of books. My mom got me a whole shelf in my room.
All right.
Yeah, we got to get another shelf, a bigger one, because I got more books coming. I tell them this all the time. Last year and this year, I said, you won't be saying nothing when I be pulling in a G or something better, and you be at McDonald's from burgers asking for my order. I said, what?
That's a good attitude to keep. But I believe in education. It's for no other reason than the personal satisfaction of being able to understand what's going on in the world around you. And who knows? Maybe your interest will provide you with the kind of expertise that you can share with the community to make it a better place.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm amazed that I've done it. I have been avoiding this, like I said, ever since they started doing them. I just simply refused.
Oh, well,
to be
thank
interviewed.
You. I'm honored that you chose to take them up on it this time. Thank you very much.
Next time, I'm going to ask you a question.
Well, anything for the children. That's the only reason I agree, because of luck.
Oh,
at least you knew I wasn't going to be interviewed. But I said, for the children, I can't say no.